Creation. Genesis as Foundation, Part 1. Commentary for the May 23, 2020 Sabbath School Lesson. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Genesis 1:1. In the 17th century, James Usher, Archbishop of Armagh, in what is now known as Northern Ireland, calculated that creation began at sunset on Saturday night, October 22, 4004 BC. He recorded this calculation in his book, Annales Veteris Testamenti. How could he be so sure of the date? He felt that by calculating based on the genealogy from Adam to Solomon, and tacking on the years of the reigns of the early and late kings of Israel, he could come up with a year of creation for the earth of 4000 BC. However, because there was an error of 4 years in the numbering of the years under the BC-AD year numbering system developed by Dionysius Exiguus, Usher adjusted the date to 4004 BC. Since the Jewish calendar begins in the fall each year, Usher chose the Saturday nearest the autumnal equinox. Since Archbishop Usher's contribution to the Christian understanding of creation, many Christians have chosen to commit themselves to his ideas about the age of the earth. While some of those Christians may challenge his accuracy, they nonetheless remain steadfast that the age of the earth is to be measured in a few thousand years and no more. Among Christians, these individuals are known as Young Earth Creationists, or YECs. Among non-Christians, they are known by several other names, none of them flattering. The controversy over the age of the earth is often made out to be a conflict over creationism versus evolution. However, the YECs run into some serious difficulties even without considering the evolutionary debate. For instance, the cities of Damascus and Jericho have been determined to have had inhabitants as far back as 9000 BC. This is not based on any evolutionary calculations, but simply the commonly recognized and accepted dating methods for archaeological discoveries. Christians themselves also use these dating methods for many other ancient sites, not just these two cities. So how could Usher have been so wrong? Simply this. The genealogical record in the Bible is not complete. You see, with all due apologies to James Usher, the Bible never claimed to be a source for determining the age of the earth. Even the Genesis record does not make a claim for YEC chronology. Bible students infer such a claim from the fact that the genealogy is there. However, it was never intended to date the earth, but rather to establish the lineage for the Messiah. This is demonstrated by the fact that after Christ, the Bible no longer tracks genealogy. Once the Messiah was incarnate and then resurrected, the spiritual importance of genealogies passed away, just as the sacrificial system did. Perhaps because of this, the Bible does not say 6,000 years ago, God created the heavens and the earth. The chronology is not important. The point of origin is. The Bible's point is that no matter where you place it, the beginning originates with God. Everyone, whether evolutionist, creationist, or geologist, agrees on one main point, that everything had a beginning. The Bible simply says that given that understanding, consider the source of that beginning. Whether nomadic desert tribesmen of the late 2nd millennium BC or scientists of the present day, everyone can look around them and see that nothing ever produces anything greater than itself. Rather, from the greater comes the lesser, because matter is converted to energy to fuel the creation process. Energy is always lost in that process. To put it in simple terms, one cannot make refried beans without heating the pan. Once the energy has been consumed in making the refritos, it cannot all be recovered. This principle is why perpetual motion machines, Those that can function indefinitely without eventually depleting their energy source have never been created. No matter how you calculate the ratios of mass and energy in the universe, let alone our little planet Earth, eventually you come face to face with the ultimate question, where did the energy come from? Those desert nomads asked the same question, only a different matter was used. They asked, where did the objects or matter in the world come from? Simply stated, mass at rest is nothing more than potential energy. Therefore, they were in a way asking, where does the energy come from as well? Their explanation was an all-powerful, inexhaustible source of energy. They ascribed sentience to that source and named it God. Ultimately, we all are faced with the same question. Some may choose to ignore it, but the physics do not change simply because we bury our heads in the sand. The question that will not go away is, where did all the energy around us come from? When we confront that issue, we are brought to the ground of all being. Life cannot exist without energy. Perhaps this is why the ancient Hebrews wrote God's name as a form of the verb to be. Whether consciously or not, they recognize the importance of an underived energy source for life. Modern science still struggles with the idea. The universe, which was once thought to be infinite, and therefore a possible source for unlimited energy, was found instead to be finite, and perhaps only appeared infinite because it curved back on itself. At any rate, the universe also appears to need an outside, underived energy source to explain its existence. Why is all this important? Perhaps because almost 2,000 years ago, John the Apostle wrote in his book, The Revelation, that the issue of a creator God would be a defining identification of who were and who were not to be spared in the apocalypse. He wrote of a call to be given by three messengers, Greek, Angeloi, prior to final events. The first of these, Angeloi, or angels, called people to worship God as creator of the heavens, the earth, the sea, and the springs of water, in Revelation 14:7. This call to worship God as creator carries with it the implication that mankind was not doing so, thus necessitating the call. We get a hint of mankind's propensity throughout the Old Testament, where mankind had continually substituted the worship of the underived energy that had no physical form or mass with the worship of the inanimate, preferring the potential energy of mass to the underived energy of the Creator. Perhaps this was innate in man's nature. Eventually, even God took corporeal form in Jesus to accomplish what could not be accomplished otherwise. Even such a step on the part of God was not completely understood or accepted. Jesus claimed he was a union of humanity and divinity. His humanity brought him close so men could relate to him, could communicate with him. Yet his divinity presented men with an unsearchable depth that many stumbled over. He was an enigma. Men had chosen the inanimate in their search for understanding for so long that they could not well understand the language of divinity that spoke to their being. Their hearts were drawn by the commonality of being, but they had grown so accustomed to ignoring that spark of life within them. That energized spark seeks to return to its source, but they could hardly understand the presence of that source on the dusty streets of a Galilean village. After such a very long time, the memories of its presence had faded and hardly informed their minds at all anymore. This is not a new problem. God had called them to return to that understanding of the energy wellspring of all life before. In Moses' book, Exodus, we find that call. Remember the Sabbath day by keeping it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work. But the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work, neither you, nor your son or daughter, nor your male or female servant, nor your animals, nor any foreigner residing in your towns. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea and all that is in them. But he rested on the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy. Exodus 20, verses 8 through 11. The key word here is remember. The Sabbath has become a ritual without meaning for many. For some, it is a burdensome requirement that is best escaped from through machinations of strained theologies about grace and the law. But Jesus made a very provocative statement about the Sabbath. He said the Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath, in Mark 2:27. Why? Why was the Sabbath made for man? Many say it was to provide rest as a memorial of grace. However, there must be more to the Sabbath than merely enforcing rest. Perhaps the reason the Sabbath was made for man was not to give him a holiday, but to enable him to remember. God understood that man was forgetful and would forget the source of his being. The Sabbath would provide him time and opportunity to remember that relationship. Perhaps we would do well to remember. Thank you for listening to this commentary. You may find the other commentaries at Stillwaters Ministry, www.visitstillwaters.com.